On today's Wide Shut webcast, I talk to Alex Bowdler, the only UKIP supporter at the University of Lincoln. We discuss his non-typical beliefs, his experiences on campus, free speech, and social media censorship. Note, this podcast was recorded several months ago and the University of Lincoln no longer has a free speech society.
Because, yeah, he made a tweet.
But these are old tweets from, like, 2012
or something. Were they old? I thought they were, like, new.
No, I think there might have been a couple of new ones. Mm. Someone had sort of dug into his tweets.
Of course, that's all the rage, isn't it?
I feel like I might just delete my Twitter account.
Yeah, I don't think I've said anything ridiculous on my Twitter account. I think the worst thing that people could do is dig up and find that I used to be a brony, and that's about it.
Okay, fair enough. You don't know any other UKIP supporters on campus?
No, I don't. I know there's one gen who I don't think he's actually UKIP, I think he's more conservative, who Seth introduced me to. But other than that, no, there's no other UKIP voters, UKIP members, anything like that.
I mean, there's definitely some conservatives, but...
Yeah, there's one or two conservatives. There's a society's worth of them.
There's no society for UKIP.
There is no UKIP society.
Unless people are very open about it, you're not going to know.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I assume there's probably others that just...
They don't want to talk about it, because we live in a society... where people are very, very outspoken about their political beliefs if they are the ones which are generally accepted to be the correct ones. And I think that there's an issue in that people don't understand why they think what they do in a lot of cases, especially people on the left. They don't understand how to justify their own opinions because they've always just thought, well, that's the right thing to do, that's the kind thing to think. Rather than critically approaching it. I'm sure there is a way that they could critically justify their opinions and what they think and things like that, but if they're approached by someone with a different opinion, they find it very, very difficult to converse without getting upset. And I think that this is a thing which I've noticed being very, very prevalent. My sister is also like that. She had a very long period of time when I started getting into politics where she just wouldn't talk to me.
Really?
Because she couldn't understand that I could possibly not be left-wing. It was insane. My mum almost was like that as well. I mean, she lived in France in the 70s, at the height of the Soviet Union, and she was a member of a local communist cell. So she's no longer a communist, but she is still very left-wing. She supports Jeremy Corbyn and all the like. My dad is a self-proclaimed Blairite. So whenever we do talk about politics, he tends to sort of clash with my mum when I put forward right-wing political beliefs, and he's like, oh yeah, I guess that kind of makes sense. And my mum just looks at him like he's killed her dog or something.
Well, at least you've got the full kind of range of opinions.
Exactly. You know, and I think that's a good thing. That
and you've not killed each other yet. So.
Exactly. Across my life, I've been able to interact with a number of different opinions, which has made me be able to justify my own opinions, which, bringing this full circle, I think, is something that not a lot of people have had a chance to do.
I'm not a UKIP supporter, but I did vote for Brexit. And
yeah.
I've definitely seen it on campus. No one even realises anyone voted for Brexit.
Is that
the one assumes? It's just assumed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're on journalism course.
Yeah.
Do you have any of the same lectures as us in the social sciences guys?
I don't think so.
We share some
politics with a guy called Jeff Adams.
I might be supposed to know him, but I don't know. We have a number of lecturers who will just openly act as if Brexit was stupid, Trump is an idiot, and no one should ever listen to anything he says, Farage is a liar, etc., etc. And we'll just... There's one lecturer who I mean, I'm not going to name any names because I don't want to be like implicating anyone.
But I don't think I could even really.
Fair enough. I mean, there's a lecturer who's in his lectures constantly implying that there shouldn't be such a thing as a nation state, which is very concerning when they're trying to teach us about nation states and their rules and their history. And he's basically just going, well, our borders are all arbitrary, and lands don't really have indigenous cultures to them. The world should just be a huge melting pot. And it's really odd that they're so partisan in our lectures. And I could see if I was kind of in the left-wing sort of ideology group that it would just be reinforcing my beliefs.
I mean, what do you think in general in terms of lecturers openly giving their opinions? I think it's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's totally fine. I think that lecturers, especially in university where you're supposed to be more critical, should be able to air their opinions. But I do think that there should be a separation of the facts of what they're giving you in the lecture and what they think about them, what they might say before or after, or in the notes, or maybe in a seminar, or in a one-to-one conversation. I think that these two things should be kind of separate.
This Jeff guy that teaches us politics, mm-hmm. he will say, right, this is my opinion. Mm-hmm. You don't have to agree with it. Tell me I'm an idiot. Debate it.
Oh, ours don't say that. Ours just say it as if it's fact. Okay. It's very difficult kind of disseminating what's fact and opinion sometimes. I'm actually resitting the year. So I did a big chunk of the first year beforehand. And in that, there was points where I was confused as to what we were supposed to be taught and what was conjecture. Because of the nature of the way that they were inserting things into it, it was very concerning.
Did you ever have issues writing an essay and you would cite certain sources and they would
that's not something that I can really talk about, because the reason that I'm resitting the year is because I didn't do any essays. I just didn't do anything in my own time.
So, I mean, what is it that draws you to UKIP when it's quite obvious most of the campus, most young people, for some whatever reason, they've come out of this being left?
Well, I've always been very, very separated from general culture, so I don't really tend to be influenced by what the group think of the campus might be. But aside from that, for me personally, I have a number of things which I care very, very deeply about. That's national sovereignty, that's freedom of speech and expression, that's I've lost my train of thought on that one, but basically there's
freedom.
A few things. Freedom, basically. Sovereignty, freedom, and then there's a few other things that I care about, like the homeless and the care for old people and things like that. And as well as that, there's also some things which I can't agree with. And that if a party starts talking about these things, I can't agree with them. And that's when they start going against the ideas of meritocracy, or when they start in any way supporting hate crime laws or hate incident thing, because I think that's just silly at this point. And the reason I was drawn to UKIP is because they embody a lot of the kind of things which I believe in personally, and I think that they have the best chance of being able to actually carry that out, because at this point Labour has gone further left than I can ever remember it being. The Conservatives are basically at the point where they're similar to Labour was in the 90s, and there is no real right-wing alternative except for UKIP.
What do you say to people that just say UKIP's a one-issue party, they don't have a manifesto, they're just racist?
Well,
what are their positions?
I think it's very, very unfortunate that they call themselves UKIP, because that does make them seem like a one-issue party. And I think that's why they lost a lot of traction after Brexit, because they were seen to be as the Brexit party. But generally, when people say, oh, they've not got a manifesto, or they're just racist, I find these people are generally just misinformed. The interim manifesto that recently came out after the PUDs, they don't really know UKIP policy further than what the mainstream media has told them, or what some comedian on The Last Leg or something has spouted about, it just in total conjecture with nothing to back it up. I don't think that it's really valid to call UKIP racist. I think that UKIP doesn't have the bigotry of low expectations. I think that UKIP is a truly meritocratic, equality-minded group, as opposed to a promotion of diversity, equity-promoting group.
Have you seen anything at uni, the SU on campus, sort of policies that you think go against that?
I think that the current policies that we have against things, the preaching of fascism and racism and things like that on campus, what's very, very unfortunate is that these terms are very, very broad. You might think, like, as an onlooker, oh, that's great that we're not going to have fascism or racism. But then you go and you look at the student union and you've got to go, what are they going to say is fascism? What are they going to say is racism? Are they going to say, citing statistics on different performances of different groups, is that racism? Is any, what sort of level of right wing is what they define as fascism? And so on and so forth. And I think that that kind of restriction being there is problematic for the sort of public discourse. I personally believe that the secondary the primary function of a university is, of course, to be an education centre. But the secondary function, I think, should be to be a melting pot of ideas. And I think that any student union or university, I want to say legislation, but it's not really that, rules that prevent certain opinions and the airing of certain types of speech is an active detriment to that.
I mean, I can't think of anything recently, but how many years have you been at the uni?
I've been at this university for 2 years. The year before I came in, the Conservative Society's Twitter feed had that issue where it was forced to be taken down.
And the year before that was the Yik Yak.
Oh yes, the year before that Yik Yak was banned, which was kind of an anon. Yik Yak is, you can explain this better.
There was this app called Yik Yak, and it was a anonymous message board for your local area. So it would use your GPS on your phone to put you into a place where you could talk with people in your local area. But there's no, like, accounts. Everything is anonymous. The only way that you could identify someone was, like, they'd give you an icon and a colour, so you'd call people, like, Blue Giraffe and Green Waterboard or something. The issue was people could go on there and say things which may be against uni policy, and obviously it was completely filled with uni students, so it was associated with the university. What they decided to do eventually was block Yik Yak by sort of in a Great Firewall of China style approach, where you block the internet connection on the campus to that app. So it was
could people
awful.
Still use their data?
Yeah, they did.
But it kind of knocked out the traction, as far as I know.
And then Yik Yak also made it so that you could have a username. I don't know if they're now at the point where you have to have a username or not. I don't know.
But to this day, Yik Yak is still banned on campus, and that's mentioned in, I don't know if you've seen the Spiked article about the rating for the University of Lincoln. We do have that banned. I think there is something else which is banned, which was mentioned on that Yik Yak article. I can't remember what it was, but there was a certain app which is, there's another certain app.
I also read somewhere, I can't remember exactly who, but someone was going to come and speak, but they had to sign a some kind of terms and conditions, and they didn't want to do that, so they never...
I haven't heard of that one specifically.
I think it might... something, yeah.
I think it's some kind of UKIP candidate, actually, or something.
Mm. I'm not sure. It's I've only recently been trying to get involved with the party, actually. I used to be a Conservative. I actually stopped being a Conservative prior to Chequers, which is the general tipping point for a lot of people. I stopped being a Conservative when they adopted a Green Party policy of not putting women in jail was the policy that was tabled under the circumstances that women, quote, aren't as well adjusted to go to jail, which again I think is bigotry of low expectations. I'll send you the article at some point. It was something which I mocked the Green Party for putting forward in the 2015 general election, and then to see my own party, I was a member of the Conservative Party, to see my own party put that forward, that was the last straw for me, and then I just jumped straight on the UKIP bandwagon.
Yeah.
But what do you make of the whole kind of... we've seen a surge of, like, YouTube, I don't know what you want to call them, celebrities?
Yeah, the,
personalities?
The break-off of, what was it, the sceptic community? They used to be the sceptic community, and then a couple of notable sceptics broke off, and now neither the party call themselves the sceptic community.
I don't know... they're not really the sceptic community, because most of those are Americans.
I guess. Well, I mean, I suppose you're probably referring to Sargon of Akkad.
The guy in your profile, yeah.
Yeah, and Count Dankula. That profile picture was myself and Seth at the protests for the results of Count Dankula, Marcus Meachin's sentencing. That was the event that we were at, and I talked to Sargon for a while, and... it wasn't really one-to-one. It was kind of more of a round-table discussion. I was somewhat starstruck, despite trying not to be, very, very hard. But I had been listening to Sargon for a while, and I joined UKIP before he joined UKIP. I think that what he has that a lot of people don't is that he's very, very careful to always cite his sources. And he always comes off as very, very well-read. I'm not sure he is the number one most well-read person in the world. I think he kind of bigs up his own intellect. But I do think he's a very, very respectable guy, both from a terms of principles and the kind of things that he preaches.
And he's got a big reach. So.
He does have a very, very big reach.
This is what I was trying to get at. Like, to me, it seems like his audience is fairly young.
Yes, but I also think they're very international. I think that you might be able to knock two-thirds off of his viewer base for foreign viewers. I know a lot of people in the US watch Sargon. I know a lot of people on the continent watch Sargon. And the number of viewers doesn't translate exactly to the people that are in the continent. Sorry, in the country who he's able to influence.
Yeah, because I was trying to get some figures. I didn't really know how to obtain. Because there's been a surge of UKIP membership.
Yes,
I wondered what the breakdown was in terms of ages.
I don't know that for certain. I have heard that there are a lot of new 18 to 25-year-olds. I can't tell you, like, 100% verifiably, but there are a lot of new 18 to 25-year-olds, despite that being a not particularly classically UKIP voter base, which I think is very, very interesting.
I think a lot of them fall into the situation that I felt, where I used to be a Labour supporter, but then as things have got more and more less freedom of speech, more telling you what to think sort of thing. The tipping point for me was the Count Dankula case. As soon as that happened and the verdict came out that he was guilty, I completely lost faith in, like, the justice system, pretty much. And I was like, okay, this is the point. Because people always say, like, oh, you hang around with these people and you become more right-wing. I don't think I'm any more right-wing. I still feel like I'm left-wing. I still like the NHS and all of that.
But he's a bloody dirty socialist.
But it's got to the point where I feel like something needs to be done, and then when something's been done, I'll probably you know, stop supporting them if they go further right or whatever.
The Overton window has shifted very, very far to the left.
You might say far left.
Whoa!
If you were.
That's very hyperbolic, Chris.
Yeah, it is. It's not far left. Alt left. Yeah.
I believe they're referred to as the control left, as opposed to the alt right. I believe that was coined by Majid Nawaz, who is someone who I follow as well. He's very interesting. Don't always agree with him, but he's an interesting guy. You know Majid Nawaz, right?
Yeah, the Quilliam Foundation.
I think he might have been. He was on LBC. He's a used to be a radical Muslim, and now
he kind of welcomed Tommy Robinson.
Yes.
So we've got the Free Speech Society.
Yes.
Was there any friction setting that up?
Kind of. There's a bit. There are a lot of issues with the Free Speech Society that I wanted to mention this. Because we never really got enough members to get off the ground last year, and we don't really have a functional committee at the moment. We've got myself as vice president and a chap called Jake, who is the treasurer. Our president has left us, and we literally can't get anything done without the president, because we've got to go to the student union at some point and sort this out. The student union has not reached out to us on this. I'm massively busy with trying to get myself set up, because as I'm retaking a year, I'm desperate not to fail it. Our treasurer hasn't done very much, because he's just a treasurer. I don't expect him to do too much. All of the pressure falls on me. And the student union hasn't helped me at all with that.
How does it actually work, like setting up a society?
Well, what you do is you don't have to pay anything. You have to be a committee of three people. You got to go and you got to talk to the student union. You have to pitch your society. You have to talk. You have to give them a risk assessment, and you have to come up. You have to sign a document which says that you're going to stay by the student union rules, which, if I can find that, I will send it to you, because it's very, very interesting. It talks about the fact that you have to promote diversity, inclusion, blah, 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 whatever. I would be totally fine if that said...
just welcome.
Welcome, yeah. But I think the fact that we are bound by the code of conduct to promote diversity...
I mean, what does that...
I don't know. It's very vague by design.
I'd like to hope it's just welcome all, but they've said it weirdly.
Yes.
But it's a really weird phrasing.
Like, you have to give out five leaflets.
Yeah, exactly. It's quite strange. But we've had a couple of issues with the student. It wasn't an issue setting everything up, except that when it came to our training, we had some issues that we weren't able to access it initially, and we had to really badger the SU to get them to get us to help us with that. I've heard from Seth, it wasn't myself, it was Seth because he was the president, that it was quite an issue to be able to book rooms. I don't know whether that's because that's a general thing, or whether it's specifically because they were making it difficult to us because we're the Free Speech Society. I feel like it might be leaning towards the latter, because in a previous year, our housemate was able to book out entire lecture theatres. Yeah, he was able to book out entire lecture theatres to show films in, to just like five people.
I assume that's just a web thing, and just go, I want that room.
Exactly, and it was somewhat obstructive with that. Another issue is we were at some point trying to organise a protest. I don't remember what specifically it was about. It was a certain type of internet legislation.
Was it the meme banning thing?
It was long before that.
They did that in two stages, though. If it was the internet thing, I'm fairly sure it would have been the first one.
I could probably find it on the Facebook page, because we posted a lot of things about it on our Facebook page. Sorry if we're...
Oh, was it the porn thing?
Yes, it was the porn thing.
Yeah.
It was them talking about... Basically,
I know it sounds weird.
It was them saying that they were going to massively broaden the definition of porn and things like that, and the definition of illicit material.
Yeah, but
and also automatically ban it.
Was it the you had to opt?
Yeah, to
you
opt out. You had to opt into receiving that kind of thing.
So they're the nice list of all the
people who will be watching, who will be looking at the other things which they deem to be inappropriate content. Because it wasn't just porn; it was inappropriate content.
Yeah, and you don't know what that could be.
Yeah, and we were trying to organise a process on that, and we have the evidence that we still, to this day, months and months after. It's the date of it has passed. We are pending approval. They basically just ignored it. They didn't give us the approval to go ahead and do it, despite the fact that we were in contact with them and asked them if we could do it. But on the page where you're supposed to do that thing, it's pending approval. And because it's pending approval, we also can't organise any future events. We had a problem of our debates being invaded by interest groups. And what I mean by that is we only had enough time last year to have two debates. The first,
did you have any speakers going on?
We didn't have any speakers. I was desperately trying to get hold of both Sargon and Dankula, but I couldn't because the trial was going on. But what I was going to say is we had two sessions. The first one was called Can a Human Be Illegal? I thought it was a pretty stupid name.
Can a human be illegal?
It was talking about illegal immigration.
Oh, okay.
Because that was the thing at the time was that the Democratic Party and this was, I think, when the children in cages thing was happening, and the Democratic Party were getting very, very upset and saying that human beings can't be illegal. So we thought, can a human be illegal? Pretty much the first thing
you mean
we
the
said.
US?
Yeah, the US, this was at the border with the US, with Mexico. And I pretty much opened up by saying, obviously none of us think that a human being can be illegal. You can't be an illegal person, but you can be doing illegal things, so let's start with that. But what the problem with that was that Amnesty International showed up, and the whole of the Amnesty International Society showed up and basically just shouted down anyone who was having a problem with illegal immigration and things like that. And basically the politically incorrect view that's the kind of view that would supposed to be you can talk about that at the Free Speech Society was shouted down by Amnesty International. And our next one was, I don't remember exactly what it was called, but it was about transgender bathrooms. And it was about transgender people being allowed in the
opposite gender. Am I wrong in thinking the uni did put in a sort of everyone can go in this bathroom?
I don't know.
Not anywhere I've seen.
Before I came to uni, they said it like a little handbook that they had one of those votes, and then they said they were going to put in something like that where anyone could go in that bathroom.
Yeah.
But I've never actually seen it.
So I've never seen it either. I've not heard anything about that, but we'd put that forward. That was the debate for the week. And there weren't even 10 actual members of the Free Speech Society, but we booked out, you know, the big lecture hall in the art building. I believe it's called the Nicola Delahaye building now. Over the, you know, the Isaac Newton building. Yes, the one with the movie. Yeah. Well, it was a Razorhead, it was well good. But yeah, we booked out that lecture hall. There's only about 8 of us, and the entire LGBT society showed up and shouted us down again. We're trying.
How do you feel about that in general? Because
we think that that's
there's a. I'm sure you saw that Rees-Mogg incident.
Right? Oh yeah.
I get the whole free speech thing, but where do you draw the line when someone's sort of organised something to happen and people are not invited necessarily?
Difficult.
Where does their free speech clash with their
free
speech?
It's very difficult because I do believe in free speech, and as a society we believe in free speech, and it's very, very difficult for us to have to go to put any restrictions on, because then they'll go, oh well, you don't really believe in free speech, you just want to be a racist dog whistle, which is not what we want to be at all. We want to be somewhere where you can actually air your beliefs and where people can contest them and where people can, you know, agree with you or disagree with you.
Did they come to debate and discuss, or were they shouting?
They weren't rioting. It wasn't like that. It was more they would hear someone talking. They would come and they wouldn't allow us any space. I wasn't actually present for this one. This would be something that would be better to talk to Seth about, because he was there at the time. But whenever any of the pro, like, anti-LGBT stuff came out, instead of going, okay, well, we disagree with your standpoint, this is why we disagree with this, and they went, you're a homophobe, you're a transphobe, you can't say things like that, that's just terrible, etc., etc. Because part of the reason why I believe so much in free speech is because I believe that ideas that are good should be able to stand on their own. So if you have an idea such as, okay, anyone should be able to use any bathroom, you should be able to convince other people of that. It shouldn't be something which it's, you can't challenge that. That's just not some, that's just, if you challenge that, you're a transphobe. That doesn't, to me, show that that is an opinion worth having. If you can't challenge it. If you challenge it and you have, if the challenges to it can all reasonably be defeated, fantastic. That's totally fine. But if it's just you're not even allowing challenges, that's when I see the problem. Because I'm hyper meritocratic in all things, in opinions, in policy, in people, etc., etc. I think that it should always be a case of, can you justify you being the best? Can you justify you being the correct option, the thing to think, etc., etc. I don't think we'd have a BBC. I'm not publicly funded. I think that I'm very on board with the UKIP interim manifesto thing of turning the BBC into a subscription service.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think that it would be very, very positive.
I think that's one of their worst policies.
Yeah, he really likes the BBC.
I like the BBC by as an idea, but I don't like the people running it currently. I used to like it, but it's changed. Or yeah, their opinions have changed, and I guess they are trying to push an agenda now. Mm. Or maybe they were trying to push an agenda before.
No,
but I agreed with it.
That's quite interesting. Okay. An interesting fact. The BBC offices are the number one buyer of the print edition of The Guardian.
That's interesting.
Mm. It's an interesting little tidbit.
They're buying like a quarter of it, aren't they?
Yeah, a quarter of all the print editions of the Guardian.
Don't need a quarter.
The BBC.
They don't need a quarter. What are they doing with them? That's what I want to know.
Use them as toilet paper, hopefully. Yeah, you'll get a lot of people saying silly things like, oh, just don't use YouTube, don't use Google, don't use Facebook. But it's like, they've essentially got a monopoly on it.
Yeah,
it's not like a real monopoly, because it's not like you couldn't make a new streaming service.
There are kind of like different things out there now, so like,
yeah, you've got
BitChute,
Dailymotion, things like that.
And then weird crypto things,
yeah,
I don't even understand.
But the issue is that, well, I mean, as you say, that's just weird things that you don't really understand. And as a result, the general populace is never going to move to that. No matter, like, even if, like, every right-winger, let's say, decides to go on BitChute instead, that's not going to kill YouTube. YouTube is still going to have an effective monopoly. And let's hear for the person who disagrees with this, Mr. Computer Scientist.
Yeah, so my argument against this is people will always go where the videos they want are, provided there are enough of them there. Like, people don't go to Alex Jones's website to see his videos, because they're only his videos.
Of course, they go to buy his water filters.
And his tangy tangerine vitamins.
Mm. Yeah, but if you, like, people say, like, oh, you'll never find, like, a service where people can share videos which aren't on another one and don't get popular. But I say to them, have you heard of Pornhub? That's a video service. It allows videos that aren't on YouTube, and it has a huge following. And I know that you can't really equate Pornhub to politics, but, like, I think you could. Like, I think what really needs to happen is, like, somebody to make a video streaming service or video hosting service which people can just deploy to servers. You know, like WordPress
yeah.
with blogs, but as a video thing. As soon as that becomes available, there's not really going to be an excuse for people to go, oh, I can't get stuff on YouTube, because they can just put it on their own version of that sort of thing.
I think that that's very, very optimistic about the breaking of this pseudo-monopoly.
It happens.
I get the whole, they're private companies, they can do what they want.
Absolutely.
If I start something, that's mine.
Yeah.
But that's where everyone is right now in society.
It's somewhat of a public forum, in a sense. But then again, that kind of goes against... It seems almost socialist, seizing something which has gone from being a private enterprise and saying, okay, this is a public utility now. That doesn't sit right with me.
And also, like, how would you make that work in a global perspective? Because, like...
Oh, yeah, it's impossible to regulate the internet. There's no way it's ever going to happen, because you can't get everyone to do it.
Well, when everyone was going on about this sort of, oh, this is going to ban memes and stuff...
Yeah, only in Europe.
Enforce it, then, because that's not enforceable.
They could just block websites in the EU, and then it's going to be very difficult to get around. They might! They're pretty bad. They're pretty bad and pretty ridiculous in the EU.
In journalism, they harp on about how Facebook and social media is stealing their revenue and stuff.
Mm.
No, they're giving you all the traffic that you still get.
Mm.
It's all links, it's linking to
Depends if you get clicked or not. Because I'm sure you know that a great proportion of people just read headlines.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you see a headline in your Facebook feed, you might not even click the link. You might just go, oh, that's a provocative headline. How awful.
Yeah, but you're probably not going to share it just from a headline unless you're an idiot.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of idiots. You might not be aware.
Yeah.
Well, I do see a lot of just the older journalists. They're very sort of anti the new technology. It's just society moves on, find a new way of monetizing what you're doing.
Yeah, I think...
Especially when journalists are calling for, like, oh, we need to censor social media to stop fake news and stuff.
Oh, honestly,
the same reason why that exists is why the free press exists. You're arguing against yourself. Mm. Eventually, you'll just be censoring yourself.
Absolutely. It's ridiculous. I think that as soon as censoring, it's further than, like, not showing profanity and nudity and stuff to children. Any censorship further than that, it just starts getting ridiculous.
Something else, another issue that with the press is the thing that technology allows them to do is the update where you go like, oh, Donald Trump said this, and then you do a clarification, but you put in a different tweet.
Yeah.
You don't delete the original tweet, so you can push your agenda.
It's what we get, what you like to call in our circles, shout the lie, whisper the retraction.
Yeah.
The
BBC does it especially bad because what they decide to do is they don't... Actually, no, it's not the BBC, it's someone else.
I have no idea.
BBC edits articles.
Yeah, the BBC edits
someone
articles.
Someone else posts new articles as retraction.
Right.
I can't remember who it is.
I think that might be The Guardian.
Yeah,
it's especially bad with the BBC that you can't, because they edit articles, you can't see their previous articles. So, it's a kind of a petty one. It was just some random, like, donkey news of, a teenage boy in London invents a new computer. Really, he just built it from, like, pieces. It was just, you know, just a normal computer build. But the BBC then edited all of their articles to say that he didn't invent it, he just built a new one. And they'd retracted that, but in a way that it's not going to come up again, especially with, like, I have the BBC News app on my phone, I was supposed to probably do yourself. If they put a headline up on that, and then they change that headline later down the line, they're not going to beep you again about it. They're not going to tell you that they've changed it, but they've got new information. It's going to be the first thing that people get is the first thing they're going to think. I was trying to think of an example earlier, but Cheddar Man. Do you remember that one?
Rings a bell.
Cheddar Man was the first Briton.
Oh, right,
the
yeah.
first person, the oldest skeleton on Britain. And they were like, turns out Cheddar Man was black. Whoa, look at this. The first British person ever was a black person. About half a month later, it was like, actually, that was just that there was a percentage chance that he could have been,
and
it was more likely that he was white.
Yeah.
But that got no traction at all. And even to this day, if you ask someone, if you say, oh, Cheddar Man, to someone, they'll go, oh, he was black. It's like, no, that was just kind of basically clickbait.
I don't watch television anymore, to be honest. I just sort of pick and choose what I want to watch.
I've got my news feeds that I read in the morning, and if I watch a bunch of YouTube stuff in the day, and if I'm really, really bored, I will put on the BBC News on iPlayer and just watch that go by. Or if I'm really, really, really bored, I'll put on BBC Parliament and bore myself even further. That's how I get to sleep at night. But yeah, it's. I think television is starting to become kind of a thing of the past. I'd say that.
There's definitely a demographic that's holding on to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
X Factor and all that kind of EastEnders.
I feel like once I get my own house, I probably won't bother getting a TV license. Or rather, I will do the thing, which you tell the BBC, no, I don't need a TV license.
Oh yeah, I didn't pay it for years. And they've got no way of actually... the only way they get you is if them in and say, I'm watching TV. But you get sort of, like nervous people that have just not paid it because they forgot.
Then they, like, they can't
then
come
they
in
invite
if
them
got
in and
warrant.
Make them a cup of tea and just tell them that they're guilty.
They've got the detective van.
Oh, yes, the detective van.
Yeah, that's fun.
Ridiculous.
I mean, I can't say I've ever seen one driving around.
I mean, I think I might have seen one, but it was like, I don't know, did you play The Simpsons Hit and Run when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Do you remember the vans in that game with the big satellites on the top? It was very reminiscent of that.
Pizza vans?
Yeah. Yeah, it was somewhat comedic when I saw it.
I've seen it on a Wikipedia article.
It makes me laugh though. The newspaper does a story about the TV license. Yeah. They have this nice stock photo of a van with like a man like snooping.
Weren't they trying to do it for the iPlayer?
You've got to have a BBC account now.
Yeah.
To use iPlayer, and then you've got to declare that you have a TV license. Still can't really enforce it from that.
I think they just ask for a postcode, just pick a random.
They put billboards up and stuff. I'm sure you've seen the billboards in London of, there are three addresses in this postcode that don't have a TV license. There is no escape. Have you been to London recently?
Not recently.
Oh, it's bloody Orwellian. Every single time I go, it's bonkers.
I've never liked London. The sheer size of it and the size of the giant old buildings, it's just intimidating. It's like you expect some emperor to just pop out the window and look down on you.
Bloody love the old buildings. And I love how convenient it is. So generally, I mean, I usually go to London for conventions, so I'm only there for a couple of days. But whenever I go there, I generally have a good time. But as soon as I start paying attention to the little details, things like the kind of posters that they've got on the bus stations, the kind of stuff they've got up on the tube, it's a bit dystopian. It's not, it's, you know, it's
freaked me out once. I was at King's Cross. I didn't know what platform I was supposed to be on. I obviously must have looked a bit confused.
Yeah.
And a voice from God comes down and says, the train to whatever is platform zero, the man in the black. Like, how the hell do you know where I'm going and what I'm doing? I mean, it was helpful, but God, why are you watching me?
That's quite spooky, actually. I've never had that happen. And the weirdest thing that happened to me was I was wearing a stupid coat and a photography student coat. And I was like, can I take some pictures of you in your stupid coat? It was, you know, the coat. It's a stupid coat.
What's stupid?
It was, do you know Cyberdog in London? Oh, it's some like proper dumb rave stuff. It's like a really long, it's made of like felt or something, and it goes down to like my ankles, but it also has like a split in the back. See, I was going through a phase where I was like, if a coat would blow in the wind, then it looks cool.
Well, it's not a Columbine trench coat.
Oh no, nothing like that. I'd never. I'm saying that in a sarcastic tone, unintentionally. No.